This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of the program, we're going to be talking about how to deal with difficulties between attorney and client. My guests are Leon Baer, a certified specialist in bankruptcy law with law offices in Los Angeles, Long Beach, and Encino. Mr. Baer is the co-author of the NOLO consumer book, The New Bankruptcy, Will It Work for You? 5th edition. My other guest is Michael Colton, a certified specialist in legal malpractice law. His offices are in Santa Barbara, and it's a great pleasure to have both of them in the office, actually in the studio here with me. Funding for this segment of Your Legal Rights is made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, which certifies 11 fields of law, not only bankruptcy law and legal malpractice law, but appellate law, criminal law, estate planning, trust and probate law, family law, franchise and distribution law, immigration and nationality law, taxation law, workers' compensation law, and admiralty and maritime law. Additional funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Family Law Section of the State Bar and by the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. Leon and Michael, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Chuck.
Great to have you here on the eve of Thanksgiving. And I know you love San Francisco, so it's terrific. Let's do this. In just a couple of minutes, what I want to do is try to get people who have had problems with their lawyers to call in and tell us about, if they'd like, about their horror stories or the problems that they feel they've had and they don't understand why they're having this problem with a lawyer. But Leon, before we went on the air, just a few minutes ago, you told me that there's a major problem that confronts consumers, and that's the failure of the consumer to expect and have a communication with the lawyer. What's the situation here?
I get so many phone calls from prospective clients who are calling me, and I'm sure calling other lawyers as well, out of desperation, because their own lawyers who've been paid and retained to represent that person don't return phone calls. I don't understand it. I don't know why lawyers do that. The client, not only is it it's the lawyer's source of revenue, but if you do a good job for the client and keep them happy, you're going to get referrals. Mm-hmm. How is a lawyer going to stay in business without new business coming in? It's a mystery to me. But above all other things, the client is a consumer. They're paying for the service. And especially in a routine matter such as in my field, which is consumer bankruptcy, consumers hire a bankruptcy lawyer to do a case for them. The clients are very anxious about this. It's a very stressful time in a person's life, and they need reassurance. As far as I'm concerned, there is no such thing as a stupid question between a client and a lawyer. And, of course, I get asked the same questions over and over again, the same questions I've been dealing with for 35 years as a consumer bankruptcy lawyer. I don't get tired of answering the question. I'm proud of the fact my answers probably have been getting better over all these decades.
Isn't the response, though, of attorneys who don't call back on a prompt basis or don't call back at all to their clients, that we are so busy, you know, I've got to be in court, I've got all of these other clients to deal with, I just don't have time to call and speak, to take all of these calls?
Oh, sure. And that's exactly what I hear colleagues sometimes say. And in fact, it just means they either can't manage their time successfully or they're taking on too much work. They're just signing up cases just to make money without really caring about the needs of the client. That's terrible.
Michael, from your standpoint as a legal malpractice specialist, and what I think most of the people who listen to this program on a statewide basis, I think, are very familiar with the California Board of Legal Specialization and certified specialties. However, what I want to do very briefly is just say both of you went through an initial bar exam to become lawyers in California. You then had a number of years to practice your law and then take another bar exam and have people who knew you, knew your work, be able to vouch, well, this person should become a specialist and should be certified. Am I right on that, generally speaking?
Generally speaking, there are certain ways to qualify for legal specialization apart from taking the exam. There are some point systems that are employed, particularly in the newest of the specialization programs, which was legal malpractice. But once certified, you go through a process every 3 years of being recertified. And that is done by a point system where the lawyer, the specialist, fills out forms stating all of the matters, the types of matters, the types of things that they have done that qualify them to continue to be a specialist. I have my own take on what Leon said about lawyers being too busy, and I tend to agree with him. Mm-hmm, I think lawyers who say they are too busy are overextended, or they're swamped, or they're dabbling in an area that they shouldn't belong in, and they're afraid to tell the client that.
Yeah, and I think particularly in my field, consumer bankruptcy, a lot of lawyers will take bankruptcy cases when the lawyer's really not qualified to handle it. And because they don't know the answers to the questions that the clients have, that's one of the reasons they avoid communicating with the client, because they can't answer the questions.
That's a good point. Good point. But what recommendation do you have for consumers where the lawyer will not return their calls?
I think that the lawyer needs to be forceful and direct, but polite, to the staff member who answers the lawyer's phone, and just say, I'm paying for service. I can appreciate that lawyer X, Y, or Z is busy, they're in court, but I've already paid for their time, and I expect to have an opportunity to speak with my lawyer. And I hear from consumers that they're calling their lawyer's office, and this is not true of all lawyers. It is true of a small group of bad apples. And the consumers that are represented by those bad apples, they'll call me and they'll call other lawyers also, just desperate for help. And they say, you know, I call and I speak to my lawyer's secretary or paralegal and they say, oh, you're calling too much. You know, the lawyer's in court. The lawyer's busy. You know, their time is very valuable. It's a, I don't get that. I just don't get it. Because the client's the consumer. You owe them your livelihood. And if you're taking on too much work or work you don't know how to do, you better step back because that lawyer is sort of headed towards a professional precipice. You mentioned a few minutes ago taking a bar exam. California bar exam today is, what, 3.5 days? I don't even know.
I think it's three.
Something like that. And when I took my bar exam 35 years ago, it's like I couldn't have imagined I'm ever going to want to voluntarily take another one in the field of bankruptcy. But lawyers go through so many years of college and law school and the preparation for a 3-day long excruciating examination. And that bar exam, folks, something like 50% roughly of all the candidates who take that bar exam don't pass it.
Yeah, this is a very bad result, you know, this last one,
and
by the way.
To be so casual with protecting your law license, because the state bar can take a license to practice away from a bad lawyer, and this happens.
And if you get too many negative things on the internet, if someone wants to put something on a consumer to put something on an internet, that's going to possibly kill your practice.
Yeah, it certainly can. You know, the internet is a wide open platform today for people to air their grievances about anything, and lawyers who don't guard their reputation are making such a serious business mistake, not to mention the harm that they're doing to the clients, to the public. And it's just plain stupid.
What I want to do when we come back in just a moment, I'd like you to tell us if a consumer is having the kind of difficulty we're talking about here and still will not get the lawyer to call him or her back, what recommendation would you have? So if you'll hold on that for just a moment, what I want to do is I want to let you know that this program is really for you. If you have had a problem with a lawyer or are having a problem with a lawyer and you don't know what to do and you'd like to, let's say, pick the brain of my two very experienced certified specialists, please join us. It's 1-415-841-4141. 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134 if you have had a bad experience with a lawyer, if you have been confused with what a lawyer has done, if you've been overbilled by a lawyer, if you feel that's the case, if you've been abandoned by a lawyer. Join us and so that we can talk about this and try to educate other people who might be able to avoid this. So again, the number 1-415-841-4134. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're doing a program on how to deal with difficulties between attorney and client. Both of my guests are specialists in their field. Leon Baer is a certified specialist in bankruptcy law. Michael Colton is a certified specialist in legal malpractice law, and on this program, we're going to be talking about some of the things that perhaps you, if you are someone who has had a problem with an attorney, or if you haven't had a problem, some of the things that you may look out for to help you in dealing with it. So coming back to my last question, if you don't mind, and if I may ask you this, Michael, what recommendation would you have for a consumer who repeatedly tries to speak, and not just every day or something like that, and it's just an incredible pest, but legitimately, reasonably wants to talk with a lawyer, but the lawyer won't talk with that person. What would you recommend to that consumer?
I would suggest sending an email if you have email, or a letter if you don't have email, demanding, in polite terms, of course, requesting, but saying forcefully that I need to speak to you about my matter.
Mm-hmm.
And I have left phone messages for you, and they have not been returned. Once the lawyer sees something like that in writing, that lawyer better jump, or the lawyer's going to lose a client.
That's true. I can see that. We're going to take a call in a minute, but one of the things I know, Michael, you wanted to talk about, that some lawyers oversell their services and don't inform the consumers of the downside risks. Would you talk about that just a little bit?
I do a fair amount of lecturing on client selection for lawyers, and I think that much can be turned sort of in a mirror image fashion and talk to consumers about lawyer selection. One of the problems that that we see that recurs in across all areas of practice is the failure of the lawyer to manage the client's expectations appropriately going into the representation of the matter.
What do you mean by that, manage the client's expectations?
Well, overselling the upside potential of a matter, and that's primarily in the litigation area, and not telling the client at the outset what the downside risks and uncertainties are, so that the client is left with the feeling that they have a $100,000 case when in fact it's probably closer to a $10,000 or $15,000 case. There's nothing worse in terms of the client being unhappy at the conclusion of the representation when they are forced at a settlement conference or a mediation to accept much less than their lawyer led them to believe they were going to be able to get in a matter. So managing expectations up front is an important tool and skill for a lawyer to have, and the client, as a the prospective client, as a consumer of legal services, should feel comfortable interviewing a lawyer and saying, what can I expect from your representation of me in this matter? What are my downside risks? How much time is this going to take? What is it going to cost? What are the pitfalls? Leon, I think off the air, we talked about the problem of a client losing a personal injury case and then being hit with costs, including expert witness fees from the defense. And if the client's never been warned about that in advance, the lawyer's going to have a serious problem on her or his hands down the road, because that client is now out or exposed to an adverse judgment, perhaps in the several hundred thousand dollar range. The client's going to look for another lawyer that is going to tell the client your only redress at this point is to sue your first lawyer for malpractice.
Yeah, and in real life, I've seen people in that predicament who have been a plaintiff in an injury case and lost the case that they thought was their golden parachute to retirement. Mm-hmm. And they come out owing hundreds of thousands of dollars. They've never been told that this might happen. And I absolutely agree with everything that Michael has said. And I personally think that a lot of this is driven clients' unreasonable expectations, especially in the field of debt settlement, bankruptcy. A lot of it, I think, is driven by advertising, lawyer advertising. Mm-hmm. So even if you go meet with lawyer XYZ and the lawyer doesn't say anything to give the client unreasonable expectations, the client may already have that based on the advertising that brought them into the lawyer's office. And I hear a lot of sleazy stuff, a lot of sleazy lawyer ads on radio and television.
So you got to be careful about ads.
Yeah.
If it sounds too good to be true, it's too good to be true.
Yeah. Let's take a call. Valerie, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for for taking my call. Great
show
you do.
You're welcome. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is a trustee thing. When my mother was elderly, a relative brought her to an attorney. She already had an attorney, an estate attorney, but brought her to a new one that he knew, and in short order had her sign a bunch of papers saying that she had dementia and making this relative, the trustee of her estate, giving him power over her health and her estate. And very coercive sort of way that was very upsetting for her. And I guess it's kind of a cautionary tale, but I don't really know what to tell people to do about. Like, you know, it's a tough one to protect oneself against. And the attorney that he brought my mother to is one of these sleazy lawyers. I'd never known one before, but
Valerie, when did this happen?
Around 2007. Mm-hmm. And she died a couple years later, and this person has refused to disperse the estate, the valuable things to the beneficiaries.
So you're getting cheated out of your inheritance.
I had hired an attorney to, get him to disperse some of it, and he did. There's another beneficiary as well, kind of acting on his behalf. So he's, he was forced to disperse some of it, but it's been 3 years now, and he's just kind of prevaricating and sitting on it. And the attorney in question keeps going on vacation and has a way of saying really disparaging things and misspelling people's names. And
Valerie, are you having a problem with the lawyer that's representing you?
Well, the attorney that I had hired that got the trustee to disperse some of the money got tired of this case and suggested I find another attorney after, I paid her about $7,000. And I have found another attorney who seems to be, on track. And it looks like we may have to take this to probate court. Just the trustee has made away with vast amounts of money so far, but I believe the case is that while the person is still alive, the trustee can do what they want. And after the person dies, the trustee has to stop taking the money.
Valerie, let me ask you this. When you say that the trustee has taken significant amounts of money, what, as a fee for the trustee's services? Is that what you're saying?
Well, it depends on when you ask him. Sometimes he says he is not taking a fee. At other times he says he's getting paid hourly or maybe taking a fee and this and that. And it's like you get a lot of different answers.
But is the trustee an attorney?
No.
Okay. Well, what comments do you have for her? Because this is something where obviously the trustee is just dragging his heels on this.
Yeah, there are remedies in the probate court, and there are qualified, talented probate litigators who can ferret out the wrongdoing, and the courts are quite protective of the interests of beneficiaries and trusts, particularly in a decedent's trust, where there's any hint of wrongdoing or self-dealing by the trustee. And it, from what I have heard, it sounds like there's a great deal of information that would suggest self-dealing and undue influence. And if the lawyer who helped to perpetrate this, assuming that these facts can be proven, was involved, then there should be a remedy against the lawyer as well.
What county are you in, Valerie?
Marin County. I had a very hard time finding an attorney who'd be interested in having anything to do with this.
I find that strange, frankly. I do find that strange.
Well, somebody recommended somebody in Oakland, and that person declined because he said he'd be traveling back and forth, and he didn't want to charge for his time because, you know, he'd have to cross a bridge.
You know, Valerie, do you actually have you retained your current attorney now to represent you, or are you still thinking about...
Yeah, I've found somebody, and he's agreed that he thinks he can... cause my brother, this person, to disperse the funds. Also, I was going to say that the attorney that he chose to deal with in all this, I think he's making a lot of money from all these little back and forths that are going on.
I see.
Accountings that don't make sense, and the emails and the letters and the this and that. I mean, it's the time.
Valerie, let me suggest something. Did you, when you were looking for another attorney, did you ever go to the Board of Legal Specialization's website and try to see who the estate planning certified specialists were in your area?
That name does not ring a bell.
Okay, all right. What I want to do, because I think this is very important, certified specialists are listed on the internet, on the website for the State Bar of California, and anywhere in the state. You can go to the website. Let me give it to you. I'd like you to know it and everybody else. www.calbar.ca.gov, and then go to the left side of the screen, and you'll see legal specialists. If you click that on, you will then find that you can go to the county in which you are located, and by clicking that one on, you can find who the certified specialists are in that particular area that maybe you're concerned about. And frankly, in Marin County, I'm very surprised that you were not able to find out about somebody who is a certified specialist in estate planning, probate law, et cetera, who could have been very helpful to you. Everybody's in every field that you don't live in. It's always a learning experience. But I hope your current attorney will be able to help you. But I think it's very important in something like this, what you're faced with, that you get a specialist to deal with this. And someone, as Michael talks about, who has experience in probate litigation. Because obviously... go ahead.
I think the attorney that I have is pretty good, but it seems to me that when people talk about probate law, they are talking about it from the side of the trustee.
No.
And
no.
From the beneficiaries, I don't really.
No. No. That's not correct. No. No.
Let me give a little bit of a different perspective, because I don't think that you necessarily must have a certified specialist, but you must have someone who is competent in the area, who has some experience and some comfort level in handling that kind of trust dispute and probate litigation. And if they can't do it, that it's certainly fine for them to associate in someone who is trustworthy and competent to help them to do it, because otherwise no lawyer who started off in an area could ever become competent in an area. The problem that we see is lawyers who take on a matter that they have no competence in, no experience in, and they don't reach out and get associated counsel or experts to help them. But I think if you're comfortable with the lawyer, if they seem to know what they're doing, if they maintain good lines of communication with you, a lot of it is going to be strategy and tactics and how much pressure needs to be brought to bear on the trustee. And it sounds like litigation may be the way to go.
Yeah. Yeah. Good luck to you, Valerie. Did you take down the website? I'd just like you to
help. I did. I wrote it down. Thanks so much for that.
Very good. Thank you very much for calling. I'm sorry you've had this difficulty, but certainly it may be, as Michael's talking about it, it may be that a probate matter needs to be opened to deal with the conduct of this trustee. So take care, and I wish you a happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks, you too.
Yeah, take care. All right, we have about 3 minutes left in the statewide version of the program. For those of you who are listening to us live in the Bay Area or on the Internet, www.kalw.org, we will continue for another half hour, and we will be taking your calls. So I hope that if you do have a call, wherever you are in the state of California, that you will call in and give us some information about this. What I'd like to do, and I'd like you both, if you don't mind, in the next minute and a half or so, there is a website, avvo.com. What's the significance of that? avvo.com.
That website, avvo.com, is a website that reviews lawyers and gives a numerical score between 1 and 10 to lawyers.
10 being really good.
Yeah. So you can go on that site and you can see what other people are saying about a lawyer that you're considering for representation. And even if you're just looking for a lawyer, you can go on that website. Say, I'm looking for a lawyer in bankruptcy and I live in Marin County or Oakland or wherever, Los Angeles County. And you can look for lawyers that are listed in the area of specialization that you are interested in, and you can see what past clients have written about that lawyer.
So, and that's very important.
You got to take it with a grain of salt.
Well, yeah.
Because personally, I think some of those reviews may have been written by the lawyers about themselves. It wouldn't put it past some lawyers to write their own reviews. So take it with a grain of salt. But you can learn an awful lot about a lawyer that you're thinking of hiring.
All right. We've come to the end of the statewide version of the program. All right. It is just about 7:28, actually the correct time, 7:27:40, everybody. Set your clocks. All right. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're doing a program on how to deal with difficulties between attorney and client. I'd like to encourage any of you who have had a problem with an attorney and would like to share that and how you dealt with it, or if you weren't able to deal with it but still have the problem, how you might be able to be assisted with some suggestions from my guests by calling 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. My guests are specialists in their field, certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization. Pardon me. I get all choked up when I say that. Certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. Michael Colton is a certified specialist in legal malpractice law. Leon Baer is a certified specialist in bankruptcy law. And by the way, for those of you who listen to this program, it's wonderful for me to have both of them here. And Leon Baer has been an incredibly generous guy. If you've listened to this program when we've done Call a Lawyer Night, the next day, with rare exception, Leon will take calls during the morning on that Thursday. So this man has really shown his great generosity of time in talking with people who have bankruptcy or credit problems, debt problems. And so, Leon, thank you for all of the help you've done for all of these many, many years.
I'm very glad to do it. And I'll confess, it's a lot of fun for me to talk to people. There's no strings attached. The people that call for that resource are not going to become my client.
No obligation whatsoever.
They're not going to pay me anything. They're going to get
And they wouldn't pay anything anyway.
Well, that's right. You've seen my wardrobe.
No, it's good. It's a beautiful coat you're wearing here. Before we take our next call, and we're going to get to that person in just a minute, support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation in both San Francisco and Marin County. For a referral to a lawyer, you can call 415-989-1616, 415-989-1616. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own and, of course, during normal business hours, 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. If you're in any other county in California, every county has a bar association and lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours. Tell them what the problem is. They'll do their best to find someone who's experienced and set you up for a half an hour consultation. The beauty of this, if you feel, what do I do now? What do I do now? The beauty of this is that you can have a half an hour consultation with an attorney or more than one attorney, depending on how you feel about who you see initially, for anywhere from $25 to $35. It's a great way to get some education in how you might deal with your problem. So it's there for you. Okay, we've got Andrew. Welcome to the program.
Yes, hello. I'd like some advice, please. Just recently, in the last couple of months, somebody brought against me a temporary restraining order, which was entirely motivated by malice. The hearing was supposed to be last Thursday, and of course, what happened was that they dropped the charges right before the hearing. But the result of all that was that I had to hire a lawyer to defend myself in case I had to go in front of a judge.
Mm-hmm.
I got a referral to a highly expensive attorney in Palo Alto, mm-hmm. who really was negligent in handling my case. And there are two particular examples of what he did that forced me actually to fire him. But not after I'd spent a huge amount of money on him, and I had to hire somebody else, kind of, the 11th hour to help me.
Tell us what he did.
Okay. Well, I'm a green card holder, and one of the things that is at risk if a temporary restraining order goes permanent is that you may find your application for U.S. citizenship to it becomes difficult. I told him this in confidence, that I was worried about this, that I wanted him. This is why I was motivated to prevail in the case. And he said that the first thing he would do would be to see if he could settle with the other side. And when he came back with the terms of the settlement, he quoted the other side saying that they didn't want to obstruct my path to citizenship. Now, it's not that information I'd never ever would have told the other side. There's no way they could have known that. The only way possibly they could have known that is if my attorney had disclosed it to them.
So you feel, Andrew, that was negligence on his part?
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm. I do. I think it prejudiced my case.
Mm.
And there were various other things that happened along the way. But the thing that really bothered me and which caused me to have to fire him was, we had a hearing date set for something like the 13th of November, and the other side then requested or put forward this thing called a stipulation to continue it for another week.
Mm-hmm.
I had absolutely no wish to have this thing over my head for another day, let alone another week. So I wrote back to my attorney and I said, no, I don't want to move the date. And he wrote back to me, my attorney, and said, unless you've got a good reason, he said something like, I didn't ask you whether or not you wanted to move the date. I wanted you to give me a reason whether I should move the date or not. And I said, no, do not move the date. And then a couple of hours later, I got an email message back from him saying, too late. I've moved the date to accommodate the other attorney's schedule. So, I mean, basically, he completely disobeyed my instructions and forced this to go into yet another week and forced me to fire. I just didn't believe that this guy could support me.
Let me do this, Andrew. Let me get some comments from my guests on this. And if you will take Should he take your response on by radio as opposed to, should he hang up now?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hang up if you would, Andrew, and hear what my guests have to say, please. Thank you very much for calling.
If I could jump in first,
please.
Chuck. I heard
this is Michael Colton.
I heard a couple of troubling things, and of course we don't know all the facts, but if the lawyer was given information in confidence by the client involving his fear of a risk of adverse consequences to his path to citizenship, and if it was clear to the lawyer that this needed to remain in confidence, and then it sounds like we have fingerprints all over a disclosure of a client confidence which was unauthorized,
mm-hmm.
which is a serious breach if in fact that's what occurred. And there are remedies for that. But the remedies in the civil arena will depend upon whether the client was harmed
mm-hmm.
by it. What mm-hmm. monetary loss did the client sustain by reason of this breach of confidence? There are, of course, also state bar disciplinary remedies, which don't give the client any money, but could give the client some satisfaction. The other thing that we heard was probably a more difficult area, which has to do with the granting of courtesy extensions and stipulations mm-hmm. to extend time. And lawyers are often told that you need to rein in your client. It could be a very highly emotionally charged matter, but one of our main jobs is to act as buffers between competing interests so that matters can be resolved without resort to violence, without resort to scorched earth litigation tactics. So I tend to be somewhat sympathetic to the lawyer who says, if you can't give me a good reason why I should not grant a one-week continuance, I feel that as a matter of professional courtesy and civility, I should grant it. Now, that's not what I heard Andrew say. He said, I told my lawyer, do not grant a continuance.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he certainly, under the facts as we've been told, would have good reason not to want a continuance of that.
Mm-hmm.
This is a temporary restraining order, a hearing on a harassment injunction.
Mm-hmm.
And those are heard on a priority basis, as I'm sure you know, Chuck, from your long experience.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a good reason for that. We don't want that hanging over people's
yeah.
heads. So if the lawyer went ahead and disregarded the client's instructions, that is another problem for
yeah,
the lawyer.
Those were clear instructions, and I think the lawyer either should obey the client's wishes and express his regrets to the opposing counsel,
mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, I would normally do this,
can't
but
do
I
it.
Can't do it in this
yeah.
case,
yeah.
or withdraw from the case and just
yeah.
tell the client, I don't like the restraints you're putting on the way I practice law. However, withdrawing at that point could also be damaging to the interests of the client
mm-hmm.
because the thing may be so far advanced and so close to a determination, 1 week, that maybe it would be wrongful for the lawyer to try and withdraw at that point.
What do you think? Obviously, this is a very, very significant problem for Andrew. You can tell by the tone of his voice, not only by, of course, as well as what he has said. What recommendation would you have for him at this point? For example, would he, with what he feels is either negligence or revealing a confidential information which should not have been revealed, do you feel that Andrew might have a civil action for malpractice for the money he's already paid the lawyer, or is that going too far?
A couple things on that point, Chuck. Well, we heard Andrew say that, fortunately, the charges were dropped
yes.
prior to the
yes.
continued hearing. So he's not facing that problem. If he feels that he lost significant money or that he was damaged in terms of this disclosure of a confidence, then he should consult with a qualified lawyer who handles legal malpractice cases. And that lawyer should be able to look at the file and look at the facts and tell Andrew whether or not this is worth pursuing. With regard to the failure to follow the instruction not to grant a continuance, unfortunately, I think that's, even though that's, that was wrongful, if that's what happened, and it was hurtful, and it certainly pained Andrew, it was probably, a, in the long run, in the great scheme of things, a no harm, no foul.
It actually may even have helped matters because it gave the other side time to decide to drop the matter. As opposed to going into an immediate hearing.
Let me for you, Andrew, I think at this point it will be important for you to try to get some further advice face-to-face with a specialist. Let me give you the California Board of Legal Specialization website. It's www.calbar.ca.gov. On the left of your screen, you can go to Legal Specialists, click that on, and that'll get you to Legal Specialists in the legal malpractice area in your county, wherever you are. And so I personally, I've been a consumer advocate for many, many years in terms of being a deputy DA for San Mateo County. And I feel it's very important for people to get, even if you have to pay some money, I think it's very important to get some good legal advice so that you know, do I have something that I can go forward with, or do I really need to realize I've got to kind of do my best to let this thing go? And so I hope you will follow through, Andrew, and thank you very much,
Chuck,
for calling.
May I add one more point?
Yeah,
because
please.
Andrew said that this was a very expensive lawyer.
Yeah.
So if he felt that he spent good money and did not get services for that money, there is a remedy that is provided under the state state law, and that is mandatory fee arbitration.
Yes.
And that can be done with or without the assistance of counsel. It can be done either at the county level. The county bar associations generally do have panels of fee arbitrators, or there is also a panel that's provided by the state bar in the event that the client or the lawyer is not comfortable having it arbitrated at the county level. And the arbitration takes place, and then there's an award made, and it is, it's binding after 30 days.
Mm-hmm,
but if
mm-hmm.
either side doesn't like the result, then they can take it to court.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a right that every client has in California, to have the fee dispute determined initially in arbitration rather than having to go straight to a lawsuit.
Yeah. Now, I think most, if not all, the arbitrators are going to be lawyers. But the public should not have the impression that it's a procedure that's stacked in favor of the lawyers. I think probably the majority, a majority of those decisions probably tend to go in favor of the consumer and against the lawyer involved.
All right, here's our number if you have something that you'd like to let my guests know about and all of the people who are listening to you or listening with you. And I hope, by the way, everybody, that you are going to have a very good Thanksgiving tomorrow. And I'm very pleased that my two guests and Leon's wife, Helen, is here in the studio with me. It's nice to have people show up on a nearly a big holiday. The number 1-415-841-4134, 1-415-841-4134. My guests are Leon Baer, who's a certified specialist in bankruptcy law, and Michael Colton, who's a certified specialist in legal malpractice law. And by the way, for all of you who might be interested, when is the next Call a Lawyer night? It will be on December 17th. I bet you knew I wouldn't do it on Christmas Eve, the fourth Wednesday of the month. So you might keep that in mind, where you can call and speak off the air on an 800 number with one or more attorneys who's in the conference room here at 800-525-9917. That's for Call a Lawyer. All right, we have Alice. Alice, welcome to the program.
Hello, thank you very much.
Sure.
Thank you for the program. My problem is a little bit similar to one mentioned, but it's even more grievous to me and my family. My mother passed away recently, and she had asked me to become the executor of the Survivors Trust. She and my father, before her, had set up a trust. Mm-hmm. And then she, when she became very ill in 2009, she realized she needed to update it, and she was just barely pulled through, I think, partly to do that. And then we couldn't get the lawyer from 1997. Mm-hmm. So this one was recommended to us. And I thought how kindly he was to come to the hospital to meet her and find out her situation. And then he engaged in a series of meetings with herself. And also, I don't live in Aptos, so I couldn't be there. She had a caregiver she trusted who was also an accountant, who attended a series of meetings, and they completely revised the trust. But, well, unbeknownst to us, we only discovered it recently, he completely turned her wishes upside down. So instead of all the monies to be dispersed upon her death, he basically created a generation-skipping trust. So it's kind of complicated, but it means basically I would have to become the executor for the rest of my life if the terms of the trust were carried out, which she would never have done to me. I mean, she didn't hate me. So we basically can't change the trust now since she signed it. And I never read it myself. It was very turgidly written, and I couldn't wade even through the first two pages. And so we just accept that the lawyer had written what she had wanted, and now we find out it's almost the opposite. And so in any case, my question is, I want to make sure that other people are not inflicted with this lawyer, who is extremely smooth-talking, but basically was creating work for himself. He kept on bringing in more and more.
I'm sorry, if you would, Alice. What is your question, though?
So my question is, who can we go to make sure that this... I don't think we can do anything about this lawyer in particular, because we have no written proof of what she had wanted, except that everyone who knows her said, that's not what she wanted, that's not what she wanted. So who can we go to make sure, you know, what are the legal bodies that we can actually go to register a complaint to make sure that this doesn't happen to anyone else? I heard you saying the Internet, but I frankly would even be worried about writing something on the Internet.
You'd be worried about slander or...
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let me, and just to complete this, when you say that this was a skipping a generation, so... Were there members of your family who were dealing with this attorney in the next generation who obviously were trying to influence your mother? Is happened?
No, all of my mother's grandchildren live. One of them is very young. Mm-hmm. And the other one is fairly young, and they wish she would have had no influence because they didn't get on. And then the other two nieces are on the East Coast, and they had absolutely nothing to do.
So they had nothing to do with it. Well, let me get some thoughts for you, Alice, from my guests. You have not, I take it, you have not thought, and where do you live? What county?
I'm in San Francisco.
You're in San Francisco. You have not thought to contact and speak with a certified specialist in estate planning in San Francisco?
Oh, yeah, we now have a wonderful lawyer.
Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
So we're okay. Okay.
All right. Well, let me get some comments for you, Alice. Thank you very much, and I'm very glad that you have what you believe is a wonderful lawyer. That's nice to hear.
Yeah.
Okay, so turn your radio back up, would you?
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks. Would you respond first, Michael, please?
Sure, surely. And Alice, by the way, I'm very sorry for your loss. My condolences. I'm glad to hear you have a good lawyer. And that lawyer should be able to tell you whether there is any indication that the drafting of revisions to the trust instruments was improper in any way. If that is the case, or if that lawyer doesn't feel comfortable doing it, if they can find a trusted colleague, someone they know that does that kind of work, to look at the situation and determine whether there are facts demonstrating undue influence or that your mother was not competent to revise the trust instruments, or self-dealing on the part of the lawyer, then there may be the basis for a claim against that lawyer. And similarly, if the facts substantiate that, there may well be a basis for a complaint to the state bar disciplinary authorities to at least initiate an investigation. Now, frankly, the state bar disciplinary authorities are not generally interested in one or two instances of negligence, malpractice, or perhaps even a breach of fiduciary duty unless it is severe. But I would suggest that if you're comfortable with your lawyer is competent in the area of trusts and estate planning and probate, and you've gotten the appropriate advice, because there may have been tax consequences that motivated your mother's decisions, that would seem to me to be the way to go.
Yeah, I agree with everything Michael said. I really can't think of anything to add to it except just to give you my own encouragement. I can tell you that in my 35 years of law practice, I rarely have, if ever, have seen a person lose when they should have won. It's I usually see justice come out at the end of a matter. So I would certainly encourage Alice to stick with it and see it through.
Yeah, yeah. All right. We have a few more minutes of the program, and good luck to you, Alice. What other issues do you think people should be thinking about? We've talked about we haven't gotten enough horror stories, but we've gotten some that are obviously real problems. if one of the things that I think some people become, as you said earlier before we went on the air, pardon me, Marco, that in family law people become very emotional. And the client may actually have questions or concerns or feelings, wanting to use his or her lawyer, his or her family lawyer, as kind of like their counselor. And that's not really what the family law attorney is supposed to do. What comments do you have for someone who becomes very emotionally concerned and needs to talk to the attorney, but really the attorney is not the appropriate person to talk with when it's something like that?
The family law area is highly charged emotionally, and I sometimes have to come in and pick up the pieces afterwards when one or another client is dissatisfied with the result or with how their matter was handled. I can tell you that I have a number of very good friends who are family law specialists, and to a person, they know to associate in not necessarily on a formal basis, but they have relationships with psychology professionals in the area, in the community, that they can refer their clients to. So they know that this is an emotionally charged area. They know that when the client wants to fight about the division of the silverware, it's really not about the silverware. And they try to steer the client to appropriate therapists and counselors and try to maintain that their position is one of being the legal counselor. I'm here to handle your legal matters. I am not here. I mean, I can hold your hand, but it's going to cost you money to do that. And I am not a psychologist. They may be trained in psychology, but they're not. They've chosen not to practice as a practicing psychologist. So they have someone that they can, a trusted psychologist, MFCC counselor, who they can refer the client to.
Any comments, Leon?
Yes. A lawyer will, in speaking and communicating with the client, will typically try to keep the client focused and on track, because clients will start talking about all kinds of things that are extraneous, have nothing to do with the issue. For example, Chuck, a few moments ago, you asked Alice what her question was. And that's what a lawyer does, folks. Mm-hmm. You can listen to a client go on. And as Michael points out, they're very emotionally charged about things, the death of a parent or a dissolution of a marriage, and their anger at an ex-spouse. But the lawyer's job is to keep the thing focused and try to lead it, the discussion, to what really pertains to the problem that you have. What really is the issue or the question that a lawyer can assist you with? Because if it's just a grievance over, you know, having married the wrong person, that's not what you go to a lawyer over.
All right. What additional, we have just a couple of minutes left. What additional thoughts might you have?
I want to just say to the public, I'm very proud of being a lawyer. It's been a marvelous profession. Some people may go into the law profession for the wrong reasons, because they think they're going to make a lot of money. And certainly there are a few lawyers that have made fabulous fortunes. Most lawyers do not. Most lawyers are going to earn a comfortable living, as they should after so many years of schooling and professional practice. And lawyers do get a bad rap, and there are some bad lawyers, but it's only a small minority of them. Mm-hmm. And I've never met any person who wasn't proud of the fact that their son or daughter had become a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
So what I want to leave folks with tonight is, you know, when you're thinking about your dinner and so forth tomorrow, eat a turkey, not a lawyer.
Are you saying that the lawyer's not a turkey?
Well,
maybe the lawyer is a turkey.
We've heard about a few of them tonight, but cannibalism is against the public policy of the state of California.
We don't want to do that.
My very good friend Leon said it better than I could. I would simply add that and I've known him for more years than I think he would even like me to admit.
Yeah, Michael and I actually met each other in a sandbox, because it was in kindergarten. Yeah.
That was
56 years ago.
That's fantastic. Right. And I've been a lawyer for 36 years, which is more than half of my life. But I too went into the law to serve people. And I think by and large, the great, great majority of our colleagues in the bar did that for that purpose, to serve, to be of service to people, to be a helping profession. And there are a few bad apples. We don't want to taint the whole barrel full of lawyers by focusing solely on the bad apples. But I appreciate having had the opportunity to be here with you.
I thank you both very much, and I wish you a happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you.
Tomorrow up in San Francisco. I know you're going to be here for Thanksgiving dinner. My guests have been Leon Baer, Certified Specialist in Bankruptcy Law, and Michael Colton, Certified Specialist in Legal Malpractice Law. Thank you both very much.
Thank you,
Thanksgiving to you. Your Legal Rights production staff members are Program Engineer Joanne Marr and Production Assistant Martin McLean. Funding of this segment of Your Legal Rights has been made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. Additional funding of this program is made possible by the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. Next week, we're going to be talking about mortgage debt issues confronting retired, retiring, and other consumers. My guests will be Frank Adam, real estate tax attorney, Keith Ogden with the Community Legal Services of East Palo Alto, and Kara Pierce, reverse mortgage and housing counselor. I hope you join us then. Happy Thanksgiving to all of you. This is Chuck Vinnie.